You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamiting the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Happy New Year.
And it's me, Brian. And this week's episode is episode 12, the second mission from the boss. So what we're going to do this week is we're going to do all the stuff which aired up to the week ending December the 23rd. And then next week's episode will cover 2 weeks worth of stuff between the 24th of December, good old Christmas Eve, and the 6th of January. Because there's a lot of stuff ended in what we're talking about this week, and not much is starting till after the 6th of January. And indeed, there's a JoJo's clip show episode, so if I want to carry on naming these episodes by their actual episode title, we kind of have to miss that one out somehow.
Yeah. But you won't really notice the difference because you'll probably wind up talking about the same amount of stuff across these 2 weeks anyway.
Yes. So, Second Order of the Boss is there. We know they're off to Pompeii. Giorno, Abaccio, and Fugo. They've got to find the old dog mosaic, which weirdly came up in something else this very same week this episode aired.
Yeah, actually.
I can't remember what it was now, where they were discussing it. To find the key to get the transport to take Trish. But then they are attacked by Illusio, one of the hitman team.
Yeah. Well, they don't realize that yet, because
no.
Like Fugo, like they approach the moons of Pompeii, and there's just a mirror hung very conspicuously on these, like, presumably, like, valuable historical, archaeological, like, landmark walls. You probably shouldn't be, like, hanging a mirror on it with an itty. And you're like, what the fuck is this? There's a guy behind us. He's hiding behind a pillar. He's probably some...
Oh, we've lost you, Niall.
What?
We got as far as he's hiding behind some pillar, and then he kind of dropped all of a sudden.
Okay. Is it doing that a lot?
It is doing that. It was not since we started recording. When you were chatting with me before, it was doing that a fair bit. So I don't know if it's the connection or the mic doing it.
Well, you talk away, and I'll sort this out.
Okay. Yes. So, yeah. When it turned, they get. This is half remembered because I watched this so long ago.
He was talking to the lads and saying, "Oh, there's a guy behind that pillar. He's probably one of the assassins trying to stop us." And he starts coming towards him. It's like, he's right there. Turns around and there's like, they're like, which pillar? It's like, I don't fucking see him. You know, and as he turns around, points him out, and he isn't there when he sees him. But then he looks back at the mirror and he's still coming at you. So they can't quite figure out what's happening.
Yeah, is it that he sees them explode?
They seem to like explode into shards, and he's like, get out of the way, guys. And he pushes them out of the way. But, I think technically he pushed them out of the mirror. Is that what happened?
No, he's been pulled into the, because then he thinks
mirror. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he thinks they've been taken away somewhere and then he realizes, is it the bin has got the name the wrong way round?
He notices his watch is backwards on the wrong wrist. Initially, that was a good shot actually, because it shows a few shots of the area, and if you catch the bin, you can see it's the writings on it backwards and that kind of thing.
And meanwhile, they're like, he gets in a fight with Illusio, and then summons his stand, but Illusio explains, "I've only brought you in here. Your stand can't come in here with you."
Yeah.
And the stand appears.
We're the only two living things inside this mirror world, and appears to be within the confines of what the mirror can see or something, because there appears to be like distinct walls in it or whatever.
And then meanwhile, outside the mirror, Fugo's stand, Purple Haze, has appeared.
What do they call it? Purple Smoke or something?
Yes, they do.
He's there to join you. I was like, back the fuck off, man! We gotta get away! We gotta get away! And he's like, what? Why? Why should we get away? It's like, look at it, it's freaking out, man. Just do what I fucking say, you stupid motherfucker.
It's like, Giorno, like,
why should we come back?
Like, deliberately fun saying, why? I don't know what's going on. And I bet you it was like, Is this something you're going to do what I say? I'm ordering you to do what I say.
Yeah, he's trying to save this dumb kid's ass. It's like, it's...
I mean, Apache is still...
Let's back up from it.
Apache is still being a jerk towards Giordo in this episode.
I know, but
he's like...
literally trying to save his life in the instances of calling it a stupid motherfucker.
You could say why he should... You could say why you shouldn't get close.
I think he said it's incredibly dangerous. I don't have time to explain right now. Let's back off to a safe distance and I'll explain that. In as quickly as you can say those things while panicked about dying. Yeah.
No, I thought Apache was in the wrong here rather than Giordo.
If I saw an enemy stand, I would run the fuck away. That's what you do.
It's not an enemy stand. It's
I know, but it's there on the ground. It's just drooling on itself. It's freaking out, and your man is nowhere to be seen. It's like there's some weird stand shit going on, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, back up. Abaccio knows that's Fugo stand, and it's not going to attack them really, but it might just freak the fuck out. Like, you can just like back away slowly. You need to just like while they're backing away slowly, you can just say, "That's Fugo stand, purple haze. It's a bit crazy and quite dangerous. I'll probably just give it a wide radius, or we figure out where Fugo is." But Abaccio at that point say, "No. I got to inject drama and tension and fucking anxiety into everything I fucking do, because we're born monsters, and I'm an ex-cop, but I've seen some shit, man."
And I'm going to immediately abandon my colleague in order to go and get the key.
So, we got to do for the boss, it's like, you know, we got to get like, the mission's got to succeed at all costs, and Jonah was like, why is it got to succeed at all costs? We probably have a few options here. We don't know what's going on. We can probably save Fugo and get the key, the key to the thing, no problem. Why do you got like, fucking hit the nuclear option immediately? I thought as you keep saying, the older senpai here, shouldn't you have more of a level head in you?
His only recourse is to go like, it's like, if I was in deadly danger, he'd leave me. You know, it's just like, we'd all do it. We gotta go through with the mission. That was a bit extreme.
But Fugo's got clear anger management problems, so that may not have anything to do with, like, loyalty or duty. He could be just a fucking unhinged maniac.
Meanwhile, we also get Fugo's origin story, where we learn he was a child genius. He went to university at 13, where he became the target of a paedophile professor.
Yeah, and I don't know if it implies that something happened, or at the very least, the professor tried something with him before. But I assume,
Yes.
And so he beat him to death with an encyclopedia.
Yeah, which when you initially hear is like, he went to college and he beat the shit out of a professor with a 2-pound encyclopedia. It's like, whoa, really? Fucking hell, man. But then you see the reason, you're like, oh yeah, fuck that guy.
A wealthy family, and that's how he got into college. But
and that's how he got off.
He got off on the murder charge, or what, manslaughter and self-defense charge. But after that, his family disowned him. So it's like, well, this is fine. I'm gonna use my smarts in a practical way, living on the streets,
to try and dine and dash in a very specific restaurant. Fortunate for him, your man's like, I could use someone with your kind of street smarts. Join my gang. So yeah, he was the first guy that he recruited, wasn't he?
I'll try to think.
Because I think he said like, "Oh, I was thinking of starting my own gang." So, and you seem like a guy who knows his way around the world.
I need a brain.
Well, Fugo's 16, so it's about 3 years since he would have been. He would have met him.
Okay.
Need me a brainy. All the organizational stuff for me.
And the stand becomes berserk and starts punching walls.
It's fucking kind of crazy and berserk anyway. It's just like...
They're just drooling on the ground, like in anger, apparently.
Yeah, I kind of like as well how you don't see it very often, but... supposedly stands are like an emanation or a reflection of the user's like inner psychology or inner mindset, and this is like a manifestation of like Fugo's latent anger issues, because it's just a fucking ruling, like hissing fucking maniacal thing that attacks it, that comes close to it, but it's also weirdly kind of particular about keeping clean, so I was drooling all over itself. It's like my leg, and then, oh, now it's on my hands, and then I had to wipe it off, and then it's like, it's very comical to see this, like, looking, roaming at the mount, like, psychic demon thing, just getting all pernickety about getting dirt on itself.
And being very stupid about it as well. So it looks angrier than it is, but obviously it is capable of expressing anger quite well with how violent its power is, yeah.
Yes. Its power is, as when a bunch of stuff captures on its fist, break open, and unleash a flesh-eating virus. which is got a certain radius, doesn't last very long. Like
it dissolves in the air, yeah, or in daylight or something. I think it's
kills it, but you know, it'll dissolve anything that it touches in like under half a minute. So even out in broad daylight, it can still do a lot of damage.
Yeah, so like randomly punching a wall causes enough of it to evaporate into the air that some passing crows get fucking dissolved, and you're right inside the mirror then. His stand is Mirror Man, is what they call it. We can all hear what he's saying.
Man in the mirror.
Yes, man in the mirror.
Yeah, and he's going like, what the fuck happened to those crows? Was he sick or something? What the hell? It's like, dude, that crow is inside out now.
This is gross. Oh.
Yeah, I didn't need to see that. That was super gross.
when it comes to brutalizing like, human beings, you gotta have centering there. But crows, they're fair game. You can do
animals and JoJo's are kind of fucked. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking of that when it was like, oh yeah, it's the dog mosaic, because they found the dog was dead, of course.
Yeah.
Because of the Vesuvius.
No,
actual dog.
I thought that the mosaic was made in memory of a dog who had died prior to the bald volcano.
I think they found like the dog who the mosaic's all near.
The mosaic is essentially an ancient beware of the dog sign.
Oh, yes. I thought it was like, this is my dog Fluffy. I miss him.
R.I.P.
I think, yeah. I think it's probably, is it the dog I did, when I did Latin in secondary school, the first book is set in Pompeii, and I think the cover is that mosaic, if I remember correctly. So it maybe is that, and there is a dog in it, so it may be that dog. Anyway, that's Pompeii talk. Not really, but yeah, I was like, oh yeah, he just hates animals, so he's going to use this as the specific reference.
This eternally sad, god damn it, yeah. The sea was beat me to it by like a matter of centuries. Can't kill any animals here, they're all like fossilized.
Yeah, and so it ends with him running off, Giorno staying there, and Fugo are seemingly about to be defeated.
Or will he?
Or will he? We'll find out next week. I really like this. This spoiler, because the next week the episode, I really like both of these episodes together. But we'll talk about the second episode next week. But I can't remember exactly what animation I liked in this episode. But I remember thinking, oh, it's a bit weird. Like, it's because obviously it was a bit like. With Diamond is Unbreakable, it was like, it came out the gates with some really nice animation, whereas this seems to have picked up speed.
Yeah, yeah.
As it's gone along. Yeah.
I think, from Black Sabbath Part 2 onwards, there's been some really good, direction and animation cuts in it.
Now, is this one of the arcs, Niall, where you say that it contradicts things which were said previously?
Yes, of course.
I thought every JoJo's contradicts something that was said previously in JoJo's.
But you know, it's like way back in Star Wars Crusaders.
Oh, like the Mirror World thing, yeah.
With Kakyoin and Polnareff, you know, escaping Jay Giles initially.
Oh, we've lost Niall again.
Stand in the mirror there. Why is it my gun again?
You did go again, yes.
I don't know what's doing that. I've turned everything. There's nothing running in the background or nothing, and the connection is fine. I don't know why it is, but Yeah, I can recall them having a conversation in a getaway truck and Pond was freaking out and saying, oh, it's like there's like a Stan guy in the mirror. Like, what's going on there? And the Captain phone's like, snap out of it, man. When Stans are, no, they're pretty freaky and stuff, but there is a rational explanation for them. There's no such thing as like some kind of weird mirror world where Stans exist.
Yeah, yeah.
Forward was, like a decade and change later, and we got a Stan that can do just that.
It was the standard, like, Palmer, if you idiot, you fucking moron. There's no such thing as a mirror world. God damn it. You're so stupid. You stupid French motherfucker. And it's just like, what other things was he right about now?
and as well, part four, after Josuke's granddad gets killed by that serial murderer with the water stand, Jotaro's trying to comfort him, saying, well, just let it go, kid. There's no such thing as a stand that can bring anybody back to life. Until, I think, in part six, there's a stand that can do just that.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's Araki going like, I should make a stand that has a mirror world. I should make a stand that can bring you back to life. You know, just like, that's a good idea. I just threw away.
Yeah, but it may all lead to something. It may all lead to something. Whether it all, there'll be like a, he's got, maybe he's like some crazed grand JoJo's finale planned where all these contradictions and weird things make sense. Cause JoJo Line kind of hints at some of that. But it'll be a long time before we get to that in anime form.
Yeah.
Righty-ho, that is it for JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. We'll be back next week with more, and that episode is called...
Purple Haze and Man in the Mirror.
Yeah.
Or the other way around.
Yeah, Man in the Mirror and Purple Haze. But we've got so much more anime to talk about in Let's Go, the show within a show. Most of these are finishing this week. And some of them aren't, some of them carry on going. We start with one which is finishing next week. This is the penultimate episode this week. Space Battleship Tiramisu Zwei, episode 12. Blimey, that's a long word. A battle of the Hecaton Hyres.
A monster in Greek myth. Is a giant with 100 arms.
Ah, okay. Part one. In which Cadillac has... Where he claims that he's translated the last of the message, but we later learn that he's just nicked it off.
Yeah, I mean, like, the internal monologue is like, I should probably thank them. It's like, nah, fuck it. But shit has come to a head. The plot has reared its head. His wife is going through with the divorce. That's
oh my god.
Starts it. I fucking love that.
Yeah, so the final message is that you can. Create these things called the lambdas, which let you convert people's powers into a device, which he then, he's been secretly building at home, and then when he gets home, he finds that his wife's chucked it out, it's on the sidewalk, waiting to be picked up.
It's got like a bit of old carpet in it or something, yeah.
Yes, everyone else has stuck their rubbish.
What the fuck is this? Oh, no. It's like, well, I see you in the divorce court on Earth. It's like, no! Well, my hand has been forced. I must unveil my grand scheme and do Shara's counterattack, but on the divorce court on Earth.
Yeah, that's the target on Earth. Like, and all of Earth's defenses must defend this one divorce court.
Yes. So he heads off in his giant weapon of mass destruction.
It's got like a small child AI that's complaining about the lack of Wi-Fi as well, doesn't it?
Yes. And so Isuzu contacts Subaru to suggest an alliance, but it's already been leaked. And so the captain just goes, yes, we'll join you, your people's army, in an alliance against the...
Yeah.
I
initially thought the joke was going to be that the admiral of the tiramisu was like taking his thunder. It's like, I had a big speech written out about how we should join forces.
Yeah,
but it's like, no, he read about it in the previews, I guess.
Yeah.
it was neat. It's like, he did an interview in a magazine where he mentioned all this or something.
I think it's just the leak for this fucking fake show within the show.
Now, I assume the joke is knowing what that particular magazine is.
Yeah.
Which is a piece of information that I'm unaware of. I assume it's the sort of thing where you learn things before you should learn them.
Yeah, where you read the manga before you watched the show, that kind
of. Probably some kind of a gossip rag, or like they have tricks of people interview and it's saying something out of turn.
Right.
Yeah, more on in gossip later. So then everyone's trying to fend them off, and the Metis People's Army show up, and Isuzu's dad sends him some information which will help.
I was just waiting to see what the fuck that was. It delivered. Oh, man.
It is perfect Gendo pose as well.
He doesn't have the camera angle right, but it's just spot on.
Yeah, instead of the secret plans to dismantle it, he accidentally uploaded his sexy photos.
He accidentally typed search for porn into Facebook as a message, that kind of thing. Yeah.
How do I unsend the email?
And he's just there glaring at his dad, you motherfucker. They managed to blow up the engines, but he's kind of cheating that there's another engine underneath all the engines.
Yes.
Bit cheap, but yeah.
Yeah, and so it's got past everybody except for Neo Durandal is the last thing standing between Earth and destruction.
Mm. My God.
The sheer pettiness of how this is all finally kicked off is just so amazing.
Like, it could have been a long time out before he goes for his final plan, but the divorce proceedings just got ahead of him, so... good stuff. Also, the butler leaves him, so I'm guessing she got that divorce already. Him.
Yeah. And the bit with his driver when he's like about trying to give the directions and you go, I know, you just turn left at this side. Yeah,
also, is your house the one with the weird gourd thing outside? his life is so shit, that poor man.
But I think he's supposed to feel like the guy who's always trying to control things.
His life is just completely out of fucking his own control.
Which makes him the petty dictator. I've not watched the next episode, so I've got that to look forward to before we do the next podcast.
For a tweet, because I have Gorosh and things thinking we're going to do it all at once.
part of the reason why I can't is because I've got addicted to a terrible Match 3 mobile game that is getting its anime later this year. That
you're researching ahead of time, that Brian.
Because there was a trailer for it. I was like, that looks really nice. I'll download the game. And the game looks really nice as well. It's Van Miao Gogh. I don't know why the Van Gogh character is the only one who has the word Miao stuck in his name. All the other cat versions of famous artists are just called the same name as the artist.
Well, they only want to copyright the name for the show, for the products.
Yeah, that's probably the reason. It visually looks great, so I'm hoping the cartoon will be just as good. But unfortunately, it just ate up so much time matching three things constantly in a Candy Crush style, but less frenetic and less mean. It's not trying to grab your money quite as much. It does a pretty good job. Like, after you finish every level, it asks you if you want to spend £2.79 on some power-ups. No, I don't. Next up, though, we've got Golden Kamuy, episode 23, Overwhelmed.
It's tough to remember now because I also watched this and the following one together. I'm going to have trouble separating one set of events from the other.
I have just watched it. Yeah. So let me see.
I hold myself
retain...
back as I'm playing next one. I'm like, no, not yet.
That's so good, though.
The amount of shit that goes wrong is kind of like just the right amount of shit that could go wrong.
Yes. I'm trying to think who by the end of it is closest to their plan working.
Sugimoto is literally standing right beside the guy. So
that's true, probably
the best going plan so far.
He is missing a chunk of his leg.
And a hole in his face.
I guess Sugimoto and Serpa are the ones who are closest to actually achieving what they came here to do.
By the end of the episode.
Yeah, I was about to say Hijikata, but Hijikata's chained to the warden at the end. in the middle of a sword fight.
As soon as you see the thing of, oh yeah, he goes training here every day and he's wearing that fucking ball and chain thing, I was like, oh, that's going to come into play, and it does.
Yeah. Old men fucking cutting each other up for the handcuff together.
Doesn't he fucking handcuff him in, like, I don't know if it's probably like a similar phrase in Japanese, but till death do us part kind of thing. And I was like,
yeah, pretty much.
That's both romantic and manly. Well done, Golden Kamuy.
But before we get to that, yes, so we've got Shirayashi and Sugimoto trying to escape. They're stuck in the cell with the fake
Nopurabu. Pinned down by your man and the other guards in the guardhouse. And he's like, you're the escape king, escape us! You know, and he's like, okay. So he saws like a hole in the floor because there's like a air thing running underneath all the cells so they all breathe okay or something like that.
Yeah.
That's his plan.
Yeah.
But while they're doing that, the guards who are keeping them in the cell are going to have to deal with the entire invading force of the seventh
division.
Yeah.
But they've got a plan for that as well. Is that and Tsurumi's plan is his plan is to explain it to Central Command that they were busy dealing with locusts, because this is a thing which has apparently happened previously.
Well, I mean, we saw it in an episode, so we know it's a thing that happens.
No, but using cannons to deal with the locusts.
It disperses them, the sonic booms or whatever of the cannons.
And then on the way back, we saw there was a riot at the prison.
We were called in, so we went in to help. But there were, like, and your man's like, but for this plan to work, Lieutenant Tsurumi, we're going to have be no survivors. And he's like, survivors? And it's like, oh, yeah.
And then the liquid starts dripping.
Oh yeah, he's like on a murder boner right there, and it's like, he's just like that. There's, let me know precisely why that is. It's like, it's disgusting.
We're probably not gonna get your boy's background as to why he's still loyal to Tsurumi, even though he appears to be the one sane person in his side.
So far it's just like, I'm pretty sure you're on the side with a fleet of ships, so yeah, you're on the right side for surviving this
thing. Yeah, I know, but
probably fine.
I'm sure he's got like some sort of reason to be loyal to him.
Yeah, like the first reason why he's there in the first place. Sure.
Because I'm just curious, because he's the one who's not a insane person, and like the other two who run off to... One almost gets killed, and the other one also almost gets killed, but gets much closer to being killed than he is.
Well, Tsukushima, he's not be outwardly insane. Maybe he's got some other kind of neuroses.
That is true, yes. I'm sure he does.
Manifest itself on the surface.
I do like the one line that Koito's dad has, where they just... agrees with, basically says, yeah, that was all true, all the Tsurumi's lies, that's the story I'm going with. so they tried, like, the guards are trying to surrender and they just get completely massacred.
Yeah, as soon as the prison guys were setting up the, I forget what kind of machine guns those were, but on the gate, I was like, dude, they're not coming through the gate. as soon as they do that, it's just like, yeah, they're blowing their way through the wall.
Yeah. Inkarma explains, why she aligned with Tsurumi.
It's basically like that it's convenient now. It's like, we can't beat this, is what she kind of comes down to.
Yes.
They hide in the escape tunnel, but then it collapses and she gets stuck underneath.
Mm. And he refuses to let her die there, bursting open his chest in a display of manly strength. And I was really worried she was going to get killed. And then your man comes in to save him.
That is the funniest bit, is Ishiyama.
I always think of acting... him as Big Senpai. I need to fucking remember his fucking name.
It's the way his dialogue suggests that he's going to take Tanageki's
like,
place and get crushed.
A good life. And he's just getting crushed and crushed. And he's like, oh.
But he's actually complaining that they've got his suit.
That's
dirty.
It, Leif.
Oh, that's right, you're a monster.
It'd be worth it.
I forgot. Yeah. I was like, oh, no, not her. And then, oh, no, not him. And then it's like, oh, everyone's fine. Well, I'm glad, but this is funny as well.
Yes.
Sugimoto tries to pass off the fake Nopurabu as the real one to Tsurumi.
And it works on everyone. It's like, don't fire or else I'll shoot this motherfucker. But, you know, you have the one, the craziest guy there. I mean, like, if there's a record, it's got to be the guy with the least body parts left.
The Kaido,
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's one more body part missing by the end of the episode.
Technically. His fake leg got pulled off as well.
That's true, yes.
Well, that's what's happening. It's like, hey, right. The guy finally gets this thing to use. Yeah, actually, from Tsurumi as well, you get the fun waiting there with a pump action shotgun, which I had to look up and make sure it was actually invented then. I presume no one had done his research, but it actually had been invented by then. Mm. So, the city's just fucking fun exploding guys' heads left and right with that thing.
The guy with the moles runs after Katakura, and Katakura's got, like, as he's running away, is wondering why on earth has he got
the men drawn on his
face. Stick men drawn on his face.
There's a lot of good reactions from characters this week, and Golden Camry is fucking replete with them.
Yeah. I like Katakura a lot. And then he explains that, I'd never explained this to you when you were here. And this is the lock which unlocks all the cells in the prison.
Click.
What are you going to do against 700 criminals?
Yeah, and as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, shit. Well, your man's just like, well, I've got the upper hand. I've got, like, my whole fucking force in here. Sugimoto, you're kind of fucked. And then all the prisoners get released, and it's like, well, shit, that's a big problem. And Tsurumi's just like, everyone put your bayonets on.
So many guys in there as well. I think this guy's got an interesting character design. Oh, I wonder what his story is, but they're just going to get like mowed down by these, by this invading force. Oh.
They're all very interesting, violent men in this super prison, but it's all just going to be a crazy bloodbath in the end, yeah.
Tony Anji is taking Usurpa to Hijikata, where they're going to follow the warden to find out where he was really taking.
Yeah. His whole plan is to make everything go to shit so that you can follow the warden to where he's really hidden, because he'll go to the place. And he goes to the, is it the church where he trains
chapel,
every day?
Yeah, it's the chapel yeah. And Tony Angie's having problems because of all the shell fire is deafening him.
He wants to get indoors as soon as possible, yeah.
And as soon as the serpent knows where her dad is, she then does a runner as well.
She finds
Shiryashi.
Of course she do her own,
because Sugimoto can't get out from underneath the buildings because he can't dislocate his shoulders to climb out through the tiny hole.
Yeah, Shiryashi's going to go in like that, and then you just dislocate both your shoulders. And Sugimoto's like, how do I
can't do that! What?
It's that Sugimoto says to Shiryashi, you go ahead, I'll find another way out. And we come back to him, and he's still trying to get through that hole.
Like, he probably spent a couple of minutes like shouting, I'm the immortal Sugimoto, while ramming his shoulders into that tiny hole.
But he's going, how on earth do you dislocate your shoulders? But then Kira Ranky gets him out by blowing it up with dynamite. As he's
right in front of his face as well. It's like, I'll just stick this dynamite here. You get back, Sugimoto, when his head is stuck in the hole.
Kira Ranky took time to like dig a little bit of earth and kind of like place and pack them. Sugimoto has been backing away all that time.
I'm just saying, both of them are stupid in this scenario. Yeah.
Meanwhile, the guy with all the missing parts is followed, found Sugimoto's escape route, and he follows after him and gets in a fight.
His reaction when he's in the cell, though, he sees the smoke coming up from underneath the dead fake Nokorapu, and he's like, did he just fart? You know, it's just like, what the hell? That was great.
Sugimoto stops his knife with his mouth.
He gets stabbed in the mouth, but he holds onto his bayonet with his teeth, and it's just like, oh shit, I forgot I was stabbing Sugimoto. You can't just stab to hurt, you gotta stab to kill.
It's going out like out of his left cheek. So it's just like going right to the back of the brainstem or nothing, but still, that was fucking painful.
He disarms him, and then he remembers, oh, I've got a gun in me. I've got a shotgun in my foot.
As soon as Sugimoto sees him hold his foot really weirdly, he's just like, I'm fucking not going near that.
Yes, so he catches him in the calf.
Yeah.
But then Sugimoto pulls his leg off and shoots him with it.
Shoots his hand off with it, and then starts beating him with his own foot.
Yeah, and if it wasn't that the other people were coming along, he would have killed him.
Yeah. But he has more body parts to lose, so he'll survive a little. He's still got a nose. He's still got another arm. There's lots of him to go yet.
He's going
to
be like fucking like Dormammu and Dragon Half at the end, with the head at the end.
Yes. At least we'll get to see the crazed weapons manufacturer.
Again. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm equipped with a kind of knife hand.
Now listen up, 007.
Tony Angie gets brained by a metal ball by the warden.
Yeah, I assume that's him dead.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Everything seems kind of fucked. I guess like it was the two characters seemingly going to die, and then the show going like, "Nah, they're not going to die. Don't worry about it." It makes me go like, "Yeah, maybe okay."
Because he gets a shot off because he says, "I'm going to shoot the warden's eyes out and blind him." Obviously, it's revenge for the warden getting him blind in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
Then Hijikata comes back after hearing the shot and it looks like they're both down, but it's just the warden playing possum. And that's when they chain together and get in the duel. And then Sugimoto crawls and crawls and crawls. He's got, what's it called? The thing that a serpent gives him.
Oh, he has
the ceremonial knife.
Because your man's plan is, I have these folders of myself and a serpent seemingly quite calm together, so hopefully that'll be enough to convince him that I'm her friend. Where Sugimoto has like a personal effect that means a lot to her, and she knows the meaning of, and she and her father know the meaning of,
Yeah, and so we end with the wounded Sugimoto crawling out from under a building, seeing Noppa-Rabu and seeing the blue eyes, knowing this is the man we've been looking these past 23 episodes.
Yeah, I do like the flashes of the flares. I forget what the hell they call that.
They're flares,
yes.
The thing that make it like daylight. So he kind of catches that on one of the flashes, the blue eyes. It was a nice way of kind of having the thing change tone throughout the episode.
Yeah, because that was the same way he caught the ambush from the other fella. There was a flash.
He saw the shadow.
You could see the shadow of the gun. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, lots of dangerous men being dangerous. I like the fact that... I like the warden being as old... Well, not as old as Hijikata, but another old, wily old man. Who Hijikata has perhaps underestimated a little. Because it feels like Hijikata... Probably, there's a discussion that eventually he was going to have to... Sugimoto was going to come into conflict with him, so this was why he was trying to get rid of Sugimoto now. That's another thing which comes up in various bits of dialogue.
Mm. I just feel of how climactic this feels towards end of the first season. And first season is kind of, this is business as usual, it'll be more of this next season, but this is like, this is like, everything is coming home to roost.
It's really come to a head,
Yeah, I think, despite what people say at complaints about the stuff getting edited out, that it definitely does a decent job for the layman viewer, as we are for much of it.
Sure.
To not make really, you don't really feel that you're missing. Sometimes it feels choppy, but it doesn't feel like you're missing stuff. Unlike something we've talked about and we'll talk about again later on this episode.
I feel like the edits in this, like where it feels like a lot's happening, it feels chaotic in the way that this kind of scene should, that kind of thing. It's favor, not its detriment.
I'm going to guess most of this is, I doubt there's much cut out of this bit of the arc, because this is the arc they were rushing to get to in the first place. Anyway, I look forward to the final episode, and I guess they've got plans for more. I don't know how much more there is of the comic to adapt.
I'm not sure, actually. It feels like it got...
I know it's ongoing. I've got a vague idea of what happened.
It feels like it got to this point relatively quickly, so they might have covered a good bit of ground in the comic by now, but it could do have a bit of time for developing in any case.
Sure,
Yeah. Then we've got Thunderbolt Fantasy Sword Seekers, episode 12, The Hunting Fox.
Hunting Fox, yeah. Before we get to dealing with him, though, we've got to check in with Lo Shinkai and his talking sword girlfriend, Seven Blasphemous Deaths, who we last saw him being hauled off by a demon bird and deposited in the Wasteland of Spirits. And Seven Blasphemous Deaths is like, oh man, there's like, nothing around here for me at all for you to chop up and meat for feeding on its blood. And he's like, I know, alone at last, aren't we? What? Yes, well, there's no one else around here, but now it's just you with me. And as sort of guys have gone over, like, I'm the only guy you need. No, I'm the only man for you. So now we can finally be alone together. I can love you and pet you and polish you every day. And she's like, whoa, I'm... It's just a kind of casual fling. I'm not really ready for it and kind of serious right now. I don't know about this. No, please, no, it'll be great. Like, all those other guys know, you can clearly see I'm the best guy to wield you and chop down anybody who's got in my way. And I'll do it again if I have to, but, you know, in the time being, it's me, it's all we need. Just you and me, we'll just talk, you know, and, I can just love you forever and ever and ever and ever. And he's like, oh, I don't know about this. And then that dragon shows up, which is sort of get put up with that guy in the suit again. And he's pissed off because he's lost a wing, lost a horn. So he says, fucking humans, come for more bits of me, are you? I'll kill you, by gum. And then they get to fighting that dude. Meanwhile, back near the side of the island, Ling and Lang catch up with Hunter Fox, who he was using the other magic sword, which was, what's it called, the Knight of Mourning, the soul edge that can brain my people and turn them into zombies. He's been using that on the local village and turn them all into zombies and raising havoc. So they get to fighting. Now, last time they did this, fucking Lang won by pretty handily, but Hunter Fox, being a wily Hunter Fox, he says, here, you catch, you use the fucking the Knight of Mourning, and all of a sudden then, rather than having a bunch of guys who were coming to, innocent brainwashed guys who were attacking him, now he has a bunch of innocent brainwashed guys that are on his side, and now he has to be responsible for, so Hunter Fox is kind of using that and targeting them to throw him off his game, because as you know, Lang is a very morally upright young fella, and he won't be able to conscience know any kind of losses happening on his watch. So he can't really focus on defending himself because he has to defend all his other guys. Luckily, Shang Bu Han shows up to bait his ass out again. A nice little turnaround there, because he kept saying that Shang Bu Han isn't the right man for the job because he doesn't know, like, he doesn't have like the kind of the heart of justice to kind of the kind of steely will to kind of like make the hard calls and take out these guys. But he does know how to use fucking magic and shit though. So he thinks magic sword. Oh, so he'll use a magic sword. Give me that thing. I'll show you that. And Hunter Fox is going like, it's the same problem now. You just got a bunch of guys you got like defend from my cutting them down. It's like, really? Because I see like a bunch of dudes who I'm just going to like organize now. They're not going to even use any swords. They're just going to drop their swords and they're going to beat the shit out of you with just their fucking fists, which I do just that. So he just like organizes all these like brainwashed villagers like together into a fighting force, and they just literally just knock the shit out of Hunter Fox with just their bare hands, and they're just beating him black and blue. After just lacing kicks into him. Did I drop again?
Lost you there again a little bit. No. But we got the idea that a bunch of villagers were beating somebody.
Hunter Fox is just getting ganged up upon on the playground, and they're just knocking seven to the shit out of him. He just runs off crying then, because, oh, this isn't supposed to happen. then all of the guys, the chief of police shows up and says, what's going on out here then? Oh, Shang, I have you, you've obviously, know your way around this. Fortunately, all your throws got out, but, wish we'd help you get to right now. It's probably the work of that villain, Shang Bu Han, after that guy. What's your name, sir? Oh, you can call me the Edgeless Blade. I'll talk to you later. But he's using the nickname rather than anything else. And then there's that other guy for Frances. Boss guy? Yeah, like, what are you here? Want to get him too? Why? Oh, nothing. Just bored. just want to piss somebody off and fuck him over. So if you guys are doing that, I'll just come and join in the end that. Because I was a guy, get that last sword back and put it away. I'm sure it's taken care of. And then back in the Western Spirits, that dragon has been taken care of handily because Lo Shinkai wielding this Seven Blasphemous Sets is way OP. And he's this poor dragon guy. This fucking gets fucking killed pretty quickly back from, honestly. He's kind of saying, there, see, there you go. I can, obviously, I'm the strongest, bestest guy to wield you Seven Blasphemous Deaths, so we can now be finally loaded together. And she's like, whoa, well, I heard there was a stronger, more handsomer guy back in the country that obviously I wish he were my boyfriend instead. He's like, who is this? Who could be a better boyfriend to you talking sword than me? Oh, it's a fellow called Shang Buhan. Yes, yes, he's very handsome and very sexy, and he's a much better sword guy than you, maybe. I think we better go and fight him just to make sure, because if you want to prove how much you love me, then you obviously have to beat him up so I know who's a real lover. And said, well, I'll do just that then. Off we go, and we'll find a Shang Buhan, and I'll prove my love to you. Which is where they're going to go. I watched ahead to the actual finale one, and it is pretty good.
We'll find out just how good next week. Then we've got, so I was distracted because I looked up Hunter Fox and discovered that there's somebody who just shovels out Kindle gay erotica under that name.
Ooh.
It could be the same guy, you don't know.
A Billionaire Dinosaur Forced Me Gay.
But this isn't the guy who writes all those pounded in the butt stories, is it?
No, no. I think this is somebody who's probably trying to exploit that niche.
Right, right.
Righty-ho. Where were we? What's next up? I believe that should be... Oh, yes. Jingai San no Yome, Episode 12, Feelings Forever Together. All the lads are now second-year students at high school. They're in their entering their second year of marriage with their monsters.
They all arranged plan to go a cherry blossom viewing party.
Yeah,
I've got the wrong term there, I think. Yeah,
But then it's going to rain, and so Kanagi ends up going outside with a ladder and a umbrella to try and protect the cherry blossoms from the rain so they don't fall off the trees before the picnic. And their wife is very worried that they're going to catch a cold standing out in the rain. But then the rain begins to stop and they can have their picnic and cherry blossom viewing after all. And the others have been doing things as well.
I don't like the way the bandage the one was tying up those little anti-rain ghosts. I don't know the proper term for them.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of them either. I used to... Terry Bozu? Terry
that's Bozu? But it has the same kind of drawn face on it as well, because your man's drawn the faces, obviously. That's his talent.
Yeah. The reason I know the name is because that's what one of the many insults that Atari used to throw at Cherry in Heroes Era.
Okay.
Yeah, and the harpy
Cyclops things, yeah.
Cyclops things had just been telling it to just stop raining. Who did you ask? The sky. Anyway, they're all very much in love. The end. Thank you for watching.
Oh, and they all wish him happy birthday because it was his birthday as well.
That's it. Yeah. Yes. And we also see in the background that one girl who's apparently married to some sort of giant white worm.
Yeah, I think that it's that worm we've been seeing in the background has since gotten married.
No, I think she was riding him or with him previously.
Right, right.
Yeah, no, I think that's they're characters you get introduced later in the comic.
Is she going to be like a husband or something? Are they just going to completely futz with things?
I don't know whether they refer to her as a wife as well or refer to her as a husband. I have
That'd
no
be
idea.
Fun.
Well, if it ever gets a second season, and based on the director's track record, it won't. We'll find out. Because what he tends to do is just another webcomic. Any lightly erotically charged webcomics, he'll take a look at them. Seems to be his mode. Then, talking of, well, I don't know how erotic, I've not watched any past the first episode, it wasn't very erotic, but Mr. Tanigawa's Middle Management Blues.
Depends what episode you watch. Episode, let me see here, 24.
24, End of the Line. Is this the last episode?
I believe so. Like, if there's another episode after this, I'd be quite surprised.
I think they announced 26, but there wasn't one the following week, so I assume it's 24. Maybe there's like two extra DVD episodes or something.
Yeah. One comes with the manga. Or
Yeah, it feels like this is sort of an ending, because it's kind of a, especially with the second half. But the first half is Hiro has summoned Tonegawa to his office, and all a bunch of men in black are there, a bunch of the higher ups are there, and they're all like worried as fuck, and he's lying on a bunch of men in black as a bed, and he's like, oh, there's nothing to life anymore, man. Movies have nothing for me. And you know, he's like, oh, Tonegawa's like, I've seen this shit before. He's like, I need a new diabolical game. And Tonegawa's like, certainly, sir, we can set up a new.
Oh, I've lost Dwayne now.
Death, rock, paper, scissors? I forgot what the hell they called it. Yeah. Oh, am I cutting out?
Yep, lost you, dear.
You were cutting out as well.
Oh, shit. Where did I...
I'm wondering whether it's Skype then, rather than any of us.
Right. Do you want me to start over, or start over from a point?
Yeah, just I think it was you were talking about being bored and the diabolical game.
Yeah, so Tonegawa offers to do another thing of the Janken, and Yoda's like, no, that's no good. I need something more deadly, something more dangerous. Tonegawa was like, well, I'm sure we can come up with something. And Hyoda's like, no, I've come up with my own diabolical game, Human Derby. So Tonegawa takes it back to the team, and he's like, listen, we're not headlining this one, but we might be running it later on. So we're going there as observers and to help out. It'll be arranged in 3 days at the Starlight Hotel, I think it is.
Yeah.
Which hasn't been finished yet. So they're all like, how's it going to be at the hotel if it's unfinished? And they're like, what kind of game is it, Mr. Tonegawa? And he's like, it's so fucking horrible that I can't possibly describe it. Like, if I described it to you, you'd be disgusted to your stomach kind of thing. I can't do it. You'll just have to see in 3 days. And, the commentator is also because of compliance issues, we cannot show you what the horribleness of the Human Derby is. And he suggests watching that arc of Kaiji.
Yes. The right thing to do.
I saw some people complaining about that. I was like, are you sure that's not a gag out of the comic?
I think it's pretty funny because
it sounds like a gag.
I had to look it up after, because I was like, was this actually a thing in Kaiji? Because I didn't know the name of that arc. I knew about the towers one and everything, but I was like, is this like one that they didn't even get to cover in Kaiji because it was so fucking horrible? It's like, no, they did.
I saw that as well. People were thinking, oh, this fucking goddamn Japanese fucking Broncos making kind of tightening up, so you can't show us this kind of thing anymore. But saying, yeah, I'm pretty sure you can. It's been
I mean, like, they already did, so.
On anime before, and literally as well, you can just go back and watch the old show. There's nothing stopping you doing that either.
Yeah, it hasn't stopped existing. And based off a joke they do later, I think it's just like a taking the piss out of maybe complaints that kind of episode got. Or those episodes got.
Yeah, like, you know, it sounds like to hear it from you, like, entirely like a gag.
Yeah, and he keeps bringing it up, like, so, like, yeah.
It's a pretty harrowing game, but it's not, like, incredibly gruesome or nothing.
Like, I think it's probably the most gruesome thing that they've done, that they've mentioned in this version of the Kaiji kind of arc, except for the whole thing where they keep joking about the fact that Tonegawa is going to die on that fucking grill over and over again for that episode. Or at least get cooked if he didn't die. I'm kind of hoping they do another season where he just has, like, grill marks on his face. I think that'd be better.
Yeah. I suppose because maybe, like, this is the game of Ireland, and if you lose, just fall into more debt and you get sent to the prison mines. If you fail in the Human Derby, you just fall to your death. Maybe that's why. I don't know.
But anyway, so it cuts to 3 days later, and unfortunately, Yamazaki has taken the day off. He had some personal business to attend to. And it just happened to take the day off. Nothing you could do about it. It's like, if I don't take the time off, I won't fucking get it back kind of thing. I gotta do it. Even though I kind of really want to see what that Human Derby thing was about. And the commentator assures us that his personal business was so boring that we can't show it. in a similar way, again, that joke, and it just shows, it tells you, obviously, look at a bunch of porn. I'm pretty sure they're taking the piss that we literally can't show you this. It's too horrible to describe. It's too boring to show. And I was like, okay, that's a bit weird. So they're skipping it. We kind of cut to Otsuki and Numikawa eating yakiniku in a restaurant, and he's like, hey, you're eating too much beef, man, you're getting greedy. By the time you're ready to eat that, it's going to be burnt because you're putting too much beef on at once. And it's the same restaurant that Yamazaki's decided to eat at, and he's kind of like, oh man, I wonder what that whole Human Derby thing's about. And he imagines the Teihai executives riding the debtors like horses and giving out to them, and the president has called his debtor his horse's name, which I forget again, that kind of thing. And he's like, and the commentator's like, no, it's not that, it's much worse than that, but again, we can't show you, sorry, we'd love to show you, but we really can't. We kind of like get like shots of the towers and just people screaming and just people going like, push him, and it's just like, no, we can't show you, sorry. Yamazaki is he's wandering around a convenience store. He tries out one of them shock pens. He gets a little shock and he's like, ow! And some high school girls laugh at him and he kind of leaves the store embarrassed. And then there's a shot of the towers again. There's lightning in the background and people just screaming, oh my God, the wind! And just, you know, again, can't be shown. I'm sorry. But you get to see Hyodo's face and he's drooling so hard and everyone else is like, just like, you know, the sick lines on their face, and they're just like, oh, this is so terrible, so horrifying. Yamazaki tries out a climbing wall, and he's like, oh, maybe I'll manage to beat my record. He just gets high enough, and oh, he falls down and hits his bum. He's like, oh, maybe not today. and then he sees the Tonegawa team chat, which Tonegawa himself is not privy to. It's a bunch of messages where it's like, oh, the wind has died, the stars, yes, it's like stars. And he's trying to like, the fuck is this about? So he puts in an emoji of like, hey guys, what was it like? And Saburo was like saying, it's like, he's about to tell him, it's like, the human derby, it's, and the battery dies in his phone and the announcer's like dead happy. He's like, whew, we might have described it there and we can't show you what it's like, as we've said, stated before. So that was a bullet dodge there. Whew. And that's the end of part one. Just the big cock tease, basically. Part two, Ogino is getting married. Hooray! And it's kind of a big happy occasion. Nakata showed up in his work clothes and everyone starts giving out to him. So they make him take off his sunglasses and put on like a paisley tie. And it's like, yeah, you're fine now. You're good. There's some tradition where the co-workers give 30,000 yen and Spearies give 50,000 yen because that's like a classy way to give wedding gifts. Is the way they keep going. It's like Tonegawa is very insistent that this is like a classy wedding and they don't do any fucking mad shit and it just goes kind of normally. And it goes pretty good. Kikuchi, Nagata, and Hagio show up because they were invited to the wedding, obviously. But they've all shown up with like tan lines around where their sunglasses would be, and they kind of show off to Tonegawa. It's like, it's not only that. Check it out. We all got bit by snakes. And they kind of pull open their shirts in various places. And he's like, come on, guys, wrap it up. We're trying to keep this thing classy. So there's a guy that no one else in Team Tonegawa knows at the Tonegawa team table. And it's just like, Tonegawa's like, oh, it happens sometimes. He doesn't have anyone else that he knows mutually with the bride and groom. So he's just kind of lumped in with us. And it's like, it'll be fine. Tonegawa gives a speech where he gives a bunch of jokes about he's so quiet, I barely see him. Oh, I don't even know if he's working. And everyone's laughing and it's great. And Nagata compliments him, was like, oh, geez, I didn't know you thought so highly of Ogino. And Tonegawa was like, that was all bullshit. What people at a wedding, they just want to hear, they want the mood to stay light. They want things to be happy. And you just got to bullshit and just go with the flow and just keep it on the fucking DL. And just keep the mood right. That's what's important here. And it's like, oh, okay, fair enough. So they watch one of those videos that shows that this is your life leading up to this wedding kind of thing. And Tonegawa was like, yeah, I've seen these kind of things before. It's very normal. And so it's like, Ogino grew up in Zambia. And it's like, wait, what? I think it was Zambia. Was it? Or was it? Yeah, Republic of Zambia. And he was like, wait a minute, that's very different. And it's like, he tried many careers, including stand-up comedy, where he was paired with this guy, and it was the guy sitting across from them on the table. That was his old stand-up routine partner. So he's had a very interesting life up to this point for a 35-year-old dude. And Ebitani's posting congratulatory tweets about the wedding from his cell at the company. I guess he wasn't invited kind of thing. So that, yeah, it all goes pretty well. It stays pretty classy. They go to take photos. Yamazaki's taking the photos, but all of a sudden he puts on sunglasses and starts dancing. And then all the other Team Tonegawa guys start dancing with them. And Tonegawa's like, oh, you stupid motherfuckers. Are you guys doing a flash mob? They're all like doing the dance and everything. And he's kind of like going like, this is so not classy and shit. And, the groom himself joins in with the flash mob. All of them in their sunglasses doing the thing. And Tonegawa was like, well, the crowd's liking it and it's keeping the happy mood. And it's like, oh, well, I'm in. And he moonwalks into that shit and just fucking picks up all the moves off him. And it's like, yeah, sometimes the announcer's like, yeah, sometimes it's like he lives and dies with these men. He works with them, but he also plays with them and he has a good time with them and he's willing to let himself loose a little. And sort of a happy ending, I guess, considering all the other shit that's going to happen. yep, that's it.
Fun. Good, good. Then we've got Zombieland Saga, episode 12, Good Morning Again Saga, which is clearly just the end of season 1 of Zombieland Saga, because it ends with a cliffhanger. Like, okay.
There's someone pointing out, those three Girls Net Idol group that's making way for this need look very similar to these three young entertainers who died very, very young. Very famously. What's going on with that?
Well, I mean, like, what did they think was going to happen? If on success, these guys are going to have their faces all across the country, and it's like, someone's going to put it together.
Yeah. But the bulk of the episode is, the first half is the girls convincing Sakura to join in with their performance, mainly Tai, because she goes berserk and grabs Sakura by the head and drags her to the practice room and then tries to practice with her the way that Sakura taught her how to dance.
It's a really nice, sweet moment where it's just like, oh, we thought she was being like a crazy zombie by, you know, doing the standard leaping through the window, grabbing someone by the head with your teeth, that kind of thing. It's like,
she's not a crazy zombie.
She's trying to help her in the same way that Sakura helped Tai, yeah.
She's kind of articulate what she's doing. I saw someone saying online that's like, that's kind of fat, just talking shite, really, but it was entertaining shite, so that's all that mattered. Your own little Siri. Because these idols are all from different eras. One of, like, Tai Mata is, like, the first idol, and she was, like, cave woman. she knows how to say. She is awake, she just can't, like,
She's in the time before language, or
That's why she's legendary, because she was the very first idol from back in the Stone Age.
I've seen other similar theories, but not going that far back as to her being. Oh, I can't remember the character's name. It's one of the ones who the cats are regularly in the cat history of Japan thing.
Nobunaga.
No, it's not Nobunaga. But we also see a flashback of Kotaro. And he was apparently a classmate of Sakura's.
Was he giving her a loan of a CD? Or because she was thanking him? I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah, I think so.
He was a big Idol fan. And, that's why his line of work is now. So
Yeah.
Yes, and he's got a different name, different hair colour, and he's not wearing sunglasses, so it's clear that his look is a disguise. Also, of course, he's 10 years older than how she'd remember him.
Also, he screams a lot.
Unless he's already also a zombie, in which case then we could throw that out the window, because clearly that guy is the ancient
alchemist
from China, yes. Yeah, and then they go and do their performance, and they get killed. Well, they would do if they weren't already dead.
Yeah, like, it's initially like, are people even going to show up? Because we're going to get snowed out and that kind of thing. The bus service is down, but a load of people show up, and the stadium collapses due to the amount of snow. Not a great endorsement of this real world place.
No. The show must go on.
Yeah.
And just get the fuck up, whatever. Just start singing. You know, all of the
no music or audio.
All of the responses, you know, and it's very shaky because it's like, we're gonna sing a song. And then Kotaro's just like
the slow clap.
Get the crowd going. Win the crowd, and you win your freedom. And they get the fuck back up there, and then because the crowd is just so like impressed and touched and taken aback by their spirit of determination of having the roof cave in on them. They still get up and they finish the set. Like, these guys, they're the real deal.
And it's initially Sakura like blaming herself. It's like, oh, this is my bad luck. I knew something like crazy like this would happen, or we'd have meet a bunch of old ladies on the way to the show or something. But
A little bit earlier when they point out, You think you've got bad luck. We've all got bad luck. We all died in really stupid matters.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all died, so we all have bad luck. So fuck it, we'll win together or fail together.
Yeah.
I did like them reacting, their little speech where it's like, yeah, remember, it's like that time. Oh, yeah. And then Sakura's like, I don't fucking remember that thing you're talking about. So you have to explain it to me, yeah.
Well, you give it a slap. And then that didn't work either.
That's our go-to move, and I'm not sure it's a very good move.
Like, I got nothing else.
You
guys got any more ideas? But they match the swayer and just get her up on the stage, and then
The crowd swayed her by believing in them after everything had gone to shit.
Queen Himiko, that's who people think Tai might be. That's the theory I've seen thrown around.
Let's look into that. So Sakura does get memories back. Is that after the roof falls in on them? I think it is.
They claim it's like, oh, you got your memories back after they finish. And I think it was during that set, essentially, where she gets the flashes.
Her second life flashing before her eyes.
Yeah, yeah. So now she remembers her whole thing, I think.
I'm even a second over in mid-performance now, kind of remembering the kind of the moves and the feeling and the way the crowd feels and the sweating emotion of that. I think that's my bring it back as well. But like troopers and finishing the show, and that's what they care about, their legend.
Yeah, and this was coinciding, I think, with them, the actresses doing their first big live as the characters live. Obviously without Tai. I believe she sent a message. People say, she can't do it. She's 50 years old. She won't be able to do it. I was like, it's like, come on, dummies. It's not because she's 50 years old. It's because they can't afford her. There's not enough money you could probably pay her to do it. To leap around the stage as a zombie. So I'm looking forward to the second season. It was a good ending for this season because it gave you a nice... It rounded out the story, but then gave you another little snippet to say, oh, where is this going?
I feel like it's a very what the hell musical fucking composers thing. There's a plot there. It's very classicaloid. It's like, ooh, the plot's coming up. It's like, yeah, but they're probably not going to do anything with it.
Yeah.
You gotta go juice and add fried chicken.
instead. Yeah.
Idle stuff, man. Idle stuff.
No, I'm fine with that, yeah.
Yeah, and we still got to see Yagiri's origin and obviously Tai's. And now Katara's, because clearly there is something there. He isn't just a maniac.
He's definitely a maniac, but yeah.
He's definitely a maniac, and we don't know whether he learned the ability.
Yeah.
Yes. Then we've got, my arch nemesis now, even though I haven't stopped watching it, Karakuri Circus. Episode 11, Fanfare.
Right, okay, so how much was cut out of this? Because it feels like it's like, hey, you're in the middle of a tournament arc now. It's like, wait, what? I am? Okay.
So I think the key things are, is obviously, so in this episode, the main thing is we get introduced to the Shirigano.
Yeah.
Who are basically the American Shirigane who have...
Were they robots? Been
cyborgs.
They're like cyborgs. They've been further augmented by Commander Faceless, their leader.
You know, it's got a face.
Well, it's a stretchy face, I'm guessing, is the joke. Yeah.
Yes. Well, some more on that in the next episode. That doesn't really... And also, he's got the same voice as Masaru's dad and whichever one was the crazed... The younger brother, Jin. Toshio Furukawa.
Yeah, they got their money for him anyway and book him in.
Oh, I mean, I think in theory he should be voicing the dog as well, but I don't think the dog's bark.
The dog has a different dolerism.
No, the dog sniffed them out.
After paying attention to the dog, not acknowledging its presence in the scene in the entire
episode.
All of a sudden,
they're
10.
Like, holy shit, check it out,
guys.
Oh, yes,
by the way, this dog is incredibly important to the plot now.
Yeah, they explain that your senses are enhanced when you become a Shirigane. And look, this dog also drank from the same well as the one which got blown up. And so he's, that's a dog, and he's got the scent of, is it Pantalone?
Yeah, died, like, under no fanfare.
Well, yeah, he didn't die. He's run off.
Right.
He's managed to survive and head back to the Midnight Circus. So we'll follow his scent. We'll get there.
We're in the middle of the Sahara, isn't it, or something?
Yeah. Yes, we're in the Sahara. Mm. In the comic, it's pretty much like between panels and they're there.
Okay, fair.
But the main thing is the Shirogado, and particularly not so much Commander Faceless, but Georges Laroche, who in the comic has already been introduced. We would have met him in the comic during the hospital arc. No, we meet him here. He's the guy with the Bateau eyes.
They all have Bateau eyes, all the old guys.
He's the one who's sent to go and fetch Ariel.
With down on his luck.
Yes. To get a
puppet
made.
Oh, yeah, I get you.
Though I don't really feel it's clear that's what he's doing in the anime.
He's getting him for something, and this seems to be the big thing they're leading to.
Yeah. Nothing is clear. Like, a lot of things just come up until they explain it.
So, I started
the following episode.
So in the comic, he fought those two puppets who attacked the hospital first and lost. And he was quite arrogant about the superiority of Shirogane to the Shirogane in the comic. And so his character arc here is that
he's got to prove himself.
He's non-existent in the anime. Yeah. Is that, Commander Faceless considers him a failure, which is why he's not coming with them to attack the Midnight Circus. He's sent on this petty trip to go and fetch
this
puppet maker.
Yeah.
And go and get a puppet made that they need. And so that's completely lost.
Hmm.
And also lost are, I believe, at least two entire characters from the Shirogane who show up to help. And also lost is the scenes where we see their lives before they arrive there in the Sahara.
Yeah. So it's like, who will introduce all these characters? Do they have a background? No.
It's just like...
No, one of them's got a photo of
all the Shirogane. It's all your favorite guys. We got Joey, we got Johnny, we got Joey Jojo, we got fucking all these other dudes, but the character designs, and then like, who are all these fucking guys? I suppose I know who these people are and be impressed by their reputation, I have no frame of reference to who these people are. Mm.
So we get, Fatima, who's from the Sahara.
Yeah, she's the only one, herself and the martial artists are the only ones who really, not that we've gotten the background of them, they just get a bunch of like stuff to do in this episode at least.
Yeah, in the comic it's like we'll pick 10 each is basically, I know it's like you bring 20 guys, you could bring 20 people into the circus, and so they take 10 Shiraganos and 10 Shirogane. But there's not enough. They end up taking the dog as one of them. The dog isn't there, but he's not one of the ones picked in this version, because they haven't got 10 named characters to
pick. I don't think so they mentioned like, the 10 thing. It's just like, we'll go one-on-one.
No,
and,
they don't.
And at one stage, they have a 2-on-2 fight. And I'm just like, wait a minute, that's against the rules we just set up.
And then some guys run in and saying, I'm Zed. I'm a Shirogane.
I'll do it! Jesus!
I'm sure you know who I am. Oh, I'm dead now.
Is it Tim Vate from Kenya? He's in it. Schwartz.
I don't fucking know. Just like
Toa from Germany and Steve Rockenfeld from the UK. Mm. So we're missing Edward Dahl from Norway, who is the guy who had a big Viking puppet, and Dmitry Ivanov, who doesn't get much of a background when he's introduced, but I believe later on he gets two entire chapters with his name in the title. Mm. So, They're missing presumed non-existence.
Yeah. They didn't show up at the start. They weren't introduced, and they didn't walk into the tent.
No.
Yeah.
And this means, not in this so much of this episode, but in the next episode, there's a bunch of scenes which have to be condensed into single scenes, and different people are given different things.
I'm not really looking forward to it.
So they go in, and they fight. Is it a guy with a merry-go-round for a head.
Yeah, it's not like a merry-go-round, like a hat.
I think it's like a merry-go-round with a guy attached to it, because...
obviously there's more merry-go-round than guy, yeah.
All you have to do is not run at the guy, and you won't get diced up in the thing. But if you have two separate, like, immortal warriors just, like, run into this thing, thinking they
I'll get him, and he gets cut up, and it's like, hey, don't throw your life away. It's like, ah, fuck it, I'll do it, and runs in. And then
I'm not the last guy. Then what happened to me?
Runs into a bunch of body parts, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's so confusing that there's entirely wrong things written on the English Wikipedia.
shit.
Because it's claiming that Fatima, Rockenfeld, Timbervati, Schwartz are Shirigalos. No, they're not. They're Shirigalos.
Yeah, they're not. She, like, Fatima has the silver hair, but not the silver eyes that the other guys have.
Yeah. In this, do they have, like, the really old Shirigane show up and say, we're too old, you need to go in? Or is that...
I didn't mention that.
No.
Most remember the merry-go-round guy.
Yeah, the comic is like, there's all the other survivors from the original village. Who say that they don't want to go in because they're too old, but Lucille's going to go in.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just better not fuck up Lucille's thing next week. Or whatever the next episode
is. I feel like that's inevitable at this stage, you know?
I mean, it feels like it, yeah, but, because it's so good in the comic. And it doesn't necessarily have to be cut for time. But they still need to do some more of a flashback as well. But who knows whether they'll do that or not. I suspect they won't. I suspect that'll get wedged at the front of Guy's flashback, because it leads into his flashback, and that seems to be how they're handling the flashbacks this time. Is attach it to the bit it leads into, rather than, or comes out of, rather than where it was in the comic.
Like, the best you can say of this episode is, like, the spectacle. Obviously, they've made a big CGI puppet man with a merry-go-round for a head. You have a bunch of pairings of the fightings and a bunch of, like, cool combo moves and that kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know or care about any of these characters. I just met them quite recently. Some of them...
Yeah, it's like... Yeah, it's Ming Zhao is still suffers from that.
Yeah.
When she's in a big chunk of this. And at least it's not as leering as it is in the comic, when they're having their clothes ripped off.
Yeah, I feel like the fact that it let them play into it in this.
Yes, I think that actually worked better in the comic, because you get more of a view of their glance to each other, as to say, oh yeah, we're just putting this on.
Yeah, we're playing up the damsel in distress kind of thing. Yeah.
This episode had a cool cut of Narumi jumping onto the merry-go-round man's head and just, like, just punching through all the horses on there. They got knives just sticking out of them. That looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
Rest of the episode, that'll be looking pretty fucking muddy, especially in any kind of crowd scene where you're going to see a lot of fucking strange faces.
Narumi's now got a silver bit of his hair, hasn't he?
Yeah.
After his 3-month journey to the Sahara.
Yeah, that explained points. I guess get some credit to the audience, probably able to figure out why that is, but, you know, nothing made of that in the least.
Yeah, I was reading some more of the scanlations of the comic, and there was a bit later on where they start having, like, reader-submitted automatons and puppets. And he mentions Suspiria, and I was like, ah, yeah, okay. I wasn't just imagining that is a vibe he seems to be going for.
Right.
Is of Italian horror.
Right.
But Suspiria in particular. Because it was because of the Suspiria pseudo-remake thing coming up, where there's, like, I think in that one in particular, there's there's three mother figures in it. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's the thing he was going for with the three old women raising Eleanor.
Right, right.
Of course, in the anime, two of them are rendered just as background dressing as opposed to actual characters.
I don't think we've seen them since.
No, because at this point, they're both dead.
Oh, I mean, like, I don't think we've seen them in anything besides that flashback is what I mean.
No. Yeah, they show up in the first arc with Narumi and Guy. Mm-hmm. And they both die in that arc, but at least you get some more idea of their personalities before croak. And a whole bunch of other stuff. It might be next episode. I think it's next episode. Forget about it. We'll bring it up next time. But there's something else happens next episode, which should have been explained at this point in the anime.
Really?
Yes. I mean,
someone likes to do
as
that.
Always.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Yeah. And yet I was infuriated that the Viking guy wasn't in this episode. I was ready to not watch the next episode.
That seems like a very fun thing. Maybe unnecessary, but very fun thing to cut. Yeah.
Yes. Cause the Russian guy, I haven't read these chapters, so I don't get an idea of what his deal was. But yeah, the Viking guy was a great design. And he was like a guy who was really happy about smashing automatons with his puppet, which had a giant mallet.
Dear.
Well, I guess the series works as an ad for the comic, because I'm looking forward to reading it and not watching any more of this.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it feels like they're going too fast now. If they got 36 episodes, they're almost halfway through the comic.
Big thing, yeah.
That's like... And you're already like 12 episodes.
Just have a massively long epilogue and just like put all of the like, emotional fucking characters
after
there.
People died.
I mean, you look at the later volumes of the comic and I'm like, it appears to be almost an entirely different comic as to what it is now. There's characters who we have not seen at all on the cover hanging out with Masaru. And I was like, okay, I have no idea where this is going. And I also wonder, like, whether he's got, like, a different ending in mind for the anime, maybe.
Oh, like, he's taking it a different direction. I was like, oh, this is... I would have taken it this direction, but now I have to rush to get there, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the history of the comic. I don't know whether it was one where it kept on going longer than it should have because it was popular and then abruptly came to an end because the popularity had waned. And obviously, the scanlations only go up to a certain point, so... As I said before, I'll just hang on to Wikipedia for dear life if I carry on watching it. We shall see whether that happens, because there's other things, and one of the other things is an hour long for its first episode. I hadn't realised.
Oh, dear.
On to something which doesn't have this problem. Well, at least it doesn't seem to have this problem. It may well have this problem, but we're not aware of it, and that's Gurazeni. Episode 24. Let me find the
Grand
page again.
Grand Rules Part 2.
Mm.
That's the one. God, I love this.
It's such a boring show done in such a fun way.
I want a miracle to happen and there'll be another season.
Yeah.
No, the comic, people like the comic a lot, so it could happen.
I'm not going to count it out. I didn't expect this
batch of episodes, honestly. So when it turned out that was the case, I was like, yeah, sure, I can go over some more of this. So if they do that again, fine. Similarly, if they don't, then that's okay as well. In which case, I might take up reading the comic. But then I wouldn't have the cool theme song to lure
that's
me in
true.
Every week.
Having said that, I did notice I still have some money in my Japanese iTunes account. Maybe that's where I need to spend it.
I thought you would have been on that for day one. No.
Hey, it's no Haybot theme song or 100% Teacher Pascal. Discord also, we didn't do a quiz. If it was a quiz, I would have bought it already. If we did my theme tune thing, I would have grabbed it. So this episode pretty much takes place mainly still in the meeting room where he's trying to convince the guys in charge to give him an extra million yen. And his reasoning is that if he does really well in the next season, they'll double his pay. And
like, the guy who scouted him said, it's like, okay, try and get as much out of him as you can. Be greedy because if you do well, your contract like doubles exponentially. Increases. So a small increase now is a big increase down the line.
So it's like if it doubles now, it'll be under 50 and they won't wonder it's 2 million below 50. So
yeah, so it won't round it up or anything.
It won't round it up. Whereas, yeah, if I get them to add another million, then we're sorted.
Yeah,
and then 2
like,
years down the line, yeah, it's even more, sure.
Yeah, I kind of like that when they're trying to blow them off and Bond says, well, like, players, we have to be advocates for ourselves, so I might be coming off a bit rude to you right now, but no one else is going to say this for me, so I got to say it to you now. And
I do enjoy how apologetic they get at the end of the episode, both him and the other guy, and also like at the very end where he's just like, oh my god, what did I do? I'm an asshole.
It's good. I was talking about saying, I got a little heated there, I apologize. I'm sorry as well, we're kind of getting a little bit pent up there, but we'll listen to you and hear you out what you have to say.
Yeah, and I like the fact that at the end they're also like, 1 million, 2 million,
exactly.
Wasn't
yeah, they actually don't give a fuck, because like, mostly it's the fact that he went off the script with them, where it's like, whoa, we can't round him up to another 500,000. It's like, come on, it's only 500. You know, that kind of he basically took them off script, which is why the guy's like, let's just take a break when in the middle of these his heated debate. Actually, what was his other thing? It was that it got an extra attention because...
Yeah, so his initial argument was that he helped them win their 1,000th win.
And
also, you're the fella's 150th win. And he's about to explain what else he did when they're trying to psych him out by taking the wind out of his sails by calling for a break.
Let's go for lunch. But,
yeah. He goes for a break, and there's some journalists outside wanting to talk to him. And he goes, I haven't signed my contract yet. And they go, oh, no, it's not about that. And then he's like,
all that?
Little, he thought they'd outwitted him, but no, they've made a mistake by giving him an hour break, because now he's learnt a piece of information that he can use against
them. Information that's relevant to them now. Yeah.
Yes. and then, yes, his second part of his argument, which he didn't get to, was that during that game, there was celebrity gossip about a singer and an actress caught out on a date at the game.
And they wouldn't have been caught had they not stayed for as many innings as they had. Or at least if they'd been caught, they would have left a couple of innings before the end of the game to avoid the reporters. But it was too exciting. They couldn't quite leave.
Yes. And because they were caught... Whenever they were mentioned, they mentioned all the stats about the spiders, and they were made the front page of the sports paper, which they wouldn't have done otherwise.
Yeah, the big reveal is him, the reporters kind of talking to him and trying to get them to admit their relationship and shit, and just like, oh, looks like your spiders won, and they're just like, yeah, you did it, Bonda!
Yeah,
you
know, and that's
on the news. Yeah.
Every time this story comes up, if it comes up about
her, up about him, up about
usually
general
about,
celebrity
about,
stuff.
You're going about the couple a lot more than probably that one game, but you're going to use that same clip of them after that game. So they've been continually after that game finished. And now...
Yes. Oh, we're losing Niall again. The other thing is, I like that he does it. He retroactively explains why so many people recognize Bonda at the restaurant before.
He doubles back on that.
Because, his face has been constantly appearing in the media.
He was talking about Bonda of the Spiders, who won their whatever game, and this was actually the, again, the standard fucking information that every fucking news outlet has for this story. But, everyone knows his face now.
And the reason the journalists would come seek him out is because they've announced that they are a couple and she's 2 months pregnant.
Get married, and they like all the fucking news with him. Yeah, so the story has gotten an upsurge again because Bonzas is like, just check the Twitter feed there. And it's like, let's just see what's on TV. Like, turns on the TV and they're literally talking about him right now. It's like, that's what I bring to the fucking game.
And I think the intimation is that after the game, they went home and fucked. And he's also the cause of the pregnancy.
Definitely people are going to fucking start making those things. And,
Because it works out, because it's like they say 7 matches after, it was a 7-match run after this match. And,
It was that good a game.
We're going to call him Bonda Jr.
Yeah, I guess that's why he gets to do the embarrassed reaction to the, again, a new news thing that was just recorded on that break there, you'll find, gentlemen, where he's like, hey, congratulations, guys. glad to help. dear.
Yeah, and then he goes off and has his meal with his mates and then kind of realizes that the younger one is earning more than both of them, and he's the one paying for the meal now. And he takes the wind out of his sails a little bit there, and then again when he gets home, and
he realizes, oh my god,
he's proud for him, but he's like realizing, oh yeah, I've still got a way to go. Great stuff. And it's just, this is the only sort of show where you could do this, like a two-part of just negotiating your contracts. Just wonderful
like,
stuff.
With this stuff, obviously, it's way more in the sports realm and stuff, but between this and Tonegawa, it's like the weird, boring adult comedy that somehow works. But Tonegawa is more silly, whereas this is more like, pretty much fucking straight, like, there's nothing fantastical about it, and that's kind of great.
Yeah, it all comes out of the characters.
We're just getting to that age where we can relate.
It could be, man, it could be.
Camera turned on, Dwayne. Hey, how's it going? You look so lovely.
What?
Your camera briefly turned on, but we could see you there.
You piece of shit. I don't know how to turn that off. I don't know why it's on.
Turn it back on again.
Oh, there he is again.
I'm just going to cover this shit up.
What a gorgeous thumb you have.
Okay, I think it's the whatever the camera thing is. You just, there should be like a turn video on and off somewhere.
Yeah, there. I'm trying to find the damn thing now.
It's like from the Skype window and then in a little like floating one.
Oh, it's in the small one, is it?
It should be in there.
Yeah.
Okay, my floating. Oh.
There you go.
I did nothing.
Nope, it's still a thumb.
Oh no. Okay. Yeah, he's back again.
No,
okay.
I think I should be gone, I think.
Yeah, you're gone now.
Sorry for that.
Ronnie Ho. Well, the listener won't have got that excitement. Or maybe I should have taken a screenshot and that would be the image.
No!
Okay, next up, after Garazene, we've got Bono Bono. Episode 38 of season 3, Pippo and Chipmunk.
Oh, fuck that guy.
Another chipmunk.
A shocking actual plot development in Bono Bono.
Like, it doesn't always, like, do the things that it sets up, but I really want this guy to get his fucking, what a piece of shit.
It's some EastEnder shit going on here. Whoa.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, so Chipmunk is going for a walk to the North Forest, and he runs into another Chipmunk.
Well, initially, he runs into Bono, who's playing Dead Push.
Yes.
Want to join me? He's like, no, I got to get one.
It's fun pushing your dad around, like not even like a wheelbarrow, it's just like on the ground, it's just
it
sliding.
Like it's more fun for the dead than Bono. Yeah.
Ha 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 ha. Ha 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 ha.
But yeah, he meets another Chipmunk in the North Forest.
Yes, Pippo, who's a blue chipmunk. He's taller, so assumingly older than Chipmunk is. And basically, he bullies Chipmunk into helping him find these flowers in return that he will show Chipmunk where there's a load of walnuts. And he basically just uses Chipmunk as his personal servant, bridge, makes him give him piggybacks across spiky ground across mud pools. Basically, Chipmunk is the one who has to risk his life to get this flower, which is growing off the edge of a cliff.
Yeah,
and he uses logic to beat him every time. He's like, well, logically, I can't do that thing. Yes. And Chipmunk's like, I guess. And it's like, no! Fucking he can do it.
And his brow beats him. Well, like, you know, no sense in both of us getting hurt. No, this way, you know, I'll have an upset stomach because I keep pulling this. Oh, I got an upset stomach. I can't do this by myself. So you should carry me across the spiky grass, because this way it'll just be your feet hurting and my stomach hurting, rather than both of our feet hurting and my stomach hurting. You see where I'm coming from, right? Yes, I think.
It's reasonable, but it's also no. Fuck you. You fucking do it.
And then keeps pulling that trick over and over and over again.
And it works every time.
Slinging Chipmunk over a cliff on the end of a vine to get the flower.
Also, why doesn't he get it on back up? You don't have to throw yourself off the cliff each time to get it.
Yeah.
To be honest, I didn't feel too bad about Chipmunk being thrown off the cliff, considering what he did to that frog that time.
This is payback, is it? Okay.
So he's getting this flower for this guy, and he wanders off with the flower, and Chipmunk's left feeling, am I being bullied? And then he's back home, and then he hears his sister talking by the river, and he goes to investigate, and she's wearing the flower in her hair, and that guy's there, and this is apparently her boyfriend, and he wants to have a lot more, looks forward to spending a lot more time with Chipmunk, to Chipmunk's horror.
Get off my sister!
Oh my god, I want to see this guy get beat up so bad.
Anyway, those two are made for each other, because Chipmunk is like, where have I gotten this feeling of overbearing, like, pressure before?
His life has gotten considerably worse with this development.
That was two of them.
Now, but the question is, how will the other sister take to him?
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping, like, a love triangle that'll end in fights. That's the best case scenario, I think.
No.
I suspect she won't have any love for him at all.
No. It's like, imagine to be kind of like two similar in their own ways. I don't know.
Like, maybe something complicated, like die fancies him, but he fancies the other sister, and she just wants to kick the shit out of everyone, and her sister's like, hey, stop beating up my boyfriend, you know. Just some more drama, basically, is what I'm hoping this comes to. But mostly that guy getting beaten up. That's what I want.
Yeah, I hope he shows up again.
No, he's fun. Yeah, he's fun because he's such a dick.
Yes. Then we've got the final episode of Gridman, episode 12, Awakening. Just saying it out loud made me go, oh yes, that makes sense.
Okay. I suppose, like, you know, Awakening is a very generic, like, title for a lot of things. I mean, it might be, isn't used as, literally, as is in this case.
So ye, oh blimey, so this was the first thing I watched, and it's been a while. Akane's been turned into a monster.
Trying to remember everything that's going down. He's basically going around introducing himself as Gridman to everyone.
Yes.
I think himself and Auntie and the lads have all defeated the other monsters.
Yeah.
Now I got a worse one.
And
yeah.
Yeah, and so they plan it. Auntie, like, goes back into his small form and goes inside the kaiju and reaches out to Akane. And rescues her, but then Alexis becomes like a giant.
Yeah.
Gurren Lagann
sized. Yeah, see, I think it's like Alexis. He jumps in, pulls her out of the miasma of like the hands of the people she'd killed and everything, kind of holding her in that kaiju, and Auntie pulls her out and she's like, oh fuck, it had to be you. And it's like, yep, I'm your failed creation who just had to save your ass. And she's kind of smiling at that because it's kind of like a pretty sick burn, actually. But yeah, he gets stabbed by your man, Alexis. So he gives you one, is like, all right, I'll give you a second shot. And like absorbs her into himself to become a kaiju himself, kind of thing. Like a kaiju version of him. Like, he has the same head, but he's got like a body rather than a physical cloak.
Yes. Yeah, and then Auntie saves himself by they all activate their Gridman activator.
They all get the cool new watch. Buy it in stores now.
Yeah, by the way, now.
And then they
catch Gridman. All of the rest of the guys have them as well, and they don't turn to anything. It's just like it just summons a better Gridman, just kind of all the armor flies off, and it's kind of, you get a more kind of classic looking Gridman to fight
the
Alexis.
True Gridman's form. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. He's now a man in a suit.
Yeah.
And also, he's no longer CG. That's the other key thing.
He's actually drawn and everything.
Yes. Yeah.
I guess that's more classic as well.
Alexis is drawn as well. But he's got effects.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Alexis just makes a speech about what a big mega creep he is, and now he's going to have to go and find somebody else to annoy after he's destroyed all this. But then Gridman uses his final power, which is to heal things, which is straight out of the live action. Thanks,
Twitter. It's like Fix Beam or something, wasn't it?
Yes, Fixer Beam, yes.
Just running like the disc defrag on this and sort of the whole thing. Yeah.
Yes. Essentially, it's a game of SimCity, which has got very out of hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can go back to a prior save state, man. That's
highly advanced. You know, you had a whole, like, grid system. You know, when Octavius and they started thinking for themselves and they didn't love you anymore. And also, taxes have gone through. Whole budget. Yeah, it's kind of touching in a way then. What's it now? Akane is immersed in this world, which we get that she's the one who's kind of created it, and she's one who presides over it all, but it kind of, she lost her grasp on it, and it kind of turned against her, and she,
yes, I don't know whether she programmed this world from outside, because obviously we see, basically, Akane and Gridman leave at the end to their respective real worlds.
Yeah. looks up.
The hyper world, I believe, is where Griffman comes from.
Yeah.
So this is like a...
As do the other guys.
Yeah. But in spite of it all, it's, you know, it didn't go all according to the programming. You know, the beings that exist inside her still want to be Akane's friend. You know, it may not be the... deal with.
Oh, losing you
God
again.
God damn it. I fucking hate this shit because I try and make a point, it gets cut off, and then one of you says the exact same thing, it gets cut off, and it's like, I should just not be here.
And then he does the thing that I suggested that it should do, but is that it goes into live action at the very end.
It was all a simulation, which we kind of figured, because of everything about it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But is it because she's got the pass holder that Rika gives her in the game, in the anime world, in the computer world?
Got Mitch's leadership. Light struck the tower. It's kind of like as well that this virtual world or wherever it is, you know, that's been created, this content has let them just exist. They were perpetually of the internet that they're in, and just let them go on doing their thing, even though they're only like computer programs, or in this case, characters in an anime series. They can just go on continuing their existence as they see fit.
And Gridman actually fixes the whole world as well, so they're not just—it's not just this one part of the city anymore.
And presumably, once he leaves, then there'll be a real Yuta.
Yeah, and he says this thing of like, will Yuta remember any of this? He's like, he'll remember it in his heart. And other such vague terms where it's like, yeah, maybe. I don't fucking know, man.
So I suppose like these are all people that Akane knows, and they have like counterparts in the real world then. Yeah.
That this was her perfect version of that world. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw some people in the comments who were like wondering whether Rick is her idealized version, because the actress who's playing the live-action Akane looks more like Rika than she does Akane.
Yeah, well, obviously Akane made herself to be like a super cool design where, she's an idealized version of herself as well.
But yeah, there's also hints of like, oh, will there be a sequel? Because we have the sound kaiju girl find Anthony.
I did suggest he was going to be the next Gridman, so yeah.
Yes, he takes the... he takes his eye patch off, and now he's got two different coloured eyes.
Yeah, I meant to look up and see of the people who are more well versed in the history of Tokusatsu and Gridman, if they had any meaning.
Well, he's got one Autobot eye and one Decepticon eye.
Yeah, it's Trigger.
It's as simple as that. Yeah.
Sorry, I have to get one more in there.
Overall, I think it's a great series.
Yeah. Mm. Missteps aside, versus maybe like fucking ripping off animators about them saying so. Even though from what I understand, I think they sorted it out later. I think maybe like when it comes to the home video, they might just reanimate that bit instead. Just litigation or complaints about it. Outside of that, I think it was pretty solid. It's up to yourself whether you. I don't think you need to be getting every kind of reference in it to end if you want to read up on things outside about Gridman or about Transformers or other Tokusatsu things like alongside it, they'll enrich it. But I'd say just maybe watch it all the way through and don't worry about that too much, and maybe read up on it later then. Why watch it again and find what you missed or
go up? Yeah, like personally, I found the Transformers references just distracting. It's like, what are they trying to say with this? It's like they're basically trying to say nothing with it. It's just a weird thing, like naming them all after bands or something that they've just decided to do, but with the visual design. I don't think you really would have needed to understand the original Gridman series and get the references to that to get that this isn't the first thing. It stands pretty well on its own as a solid piece. Yeah.
Yeah, I just got to wait for them to confirm my Lulu code.
Like you said, it'll probably be in some fucking con or something.
Yeah, it'll probably be an Inferno Cop episode at a con. Yeah, because I'm looking at the... I just did a quick search for Midori and Gridman, and yeah, the screenshots of them next to each other, because she's got the same color eyes as well.
Isn't there, like, lines in this episode? It's like, so you're going to have to fight the evil thing, okay? Okay, good luck. She's kind of like, I don't know what the fuck's going on in this show, but I'm not from this show, so why would I?
Yeah, because the explanation of how Gridman works would also make sense for that. And the fact that, yeah, Alexis does appear to have once been in the Galactic Patrol.
Drummed out of force for cyber crimes.
Yes.
Cyber criminal. Sentenced to... this is supposed to be a backdoor cyber studio way to reboot. I wish.
Then we've got Gegege no Kitaro, episode 37, Showdown Backbeard. In which they show down with Backbeard.
Yeah.
I can't remember. They beat him up. Neither of the witches has to die. And Nanashi is really super creepy at the end.
Yeah. Just like the long tongue coming out and it's fucking getting mana tagging her on her ankle or on her leg. It's like, it's fucking giving me the icks.
Yeah, mana didn't die. The waistcoat saved her. And
that's
the waistcoat
correct,
didn't
yes.
save her from turning into a yokai. It was a witch's kiss. Again, they're trying to play up that romance angle.
Yeah.
Yes.
Zero.
Yeah, pretty good. Like, having things earlier episodes come back and make sense of later things. Good job. Yeah. Double Decker goes a little further with that, but we'll get to that.
Sure.
Yeah. Lesbian water core gets a...
Nope. Lost you again then.
As I was just saying, Nezumi Otoko kicked Davin by the populace who've been turned into yokai now.
He probably deserves it.
He does, so yes.
That's fine.
Like, you know, playing no cards. I guess, like, his one heroic deed has passed, and that's all he gets. It's just, has suffered the ignominy of being the butt of the joke at the spectacular climax of the arc.
So Adele gives Kitaro a gem, which lets him power up, and then in order to fight Kitaro, Backbeard assumes human form.
I haven't taken this form in 10 centuries or whatever the fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That form seems is a bit One Punch Man inspired.
Oh, with the big eye, and that's it. Like, yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Very lithe and muscly.
Yeah, not like the old version of him driving a car in his like weird blobbing eye form that he had.
A little smile at that picture every time I see it.
this is like, this is Toei in 2018. This is getting your Dragon Ball Super fix. After you've been and got your Dragon Ball Super fix at the cinema. I might have to go and see that twice, by the way.
Oh, I'll see you both days. It's back to back.
Well, there's not, the sub is now playing in Reading for me, so.
Right.
I've already got a ticket for the dub in Oxford, so I might have to see if I can get to the Reading one as well. Because I saw the trailer for the dub, but I was like, oh, I really want to see the sub, because I don't like the dub voices.
Is it the same dub, guys, or, like, the ones?
Yeah, it is, but I didn't grow up on them, so they're all alien to me.
Like, I like the old dub guys, but, I much prefer the Japanese voices. The actors are more fun, I think.
I've gotten so much more used to them now.
I think I flipped on it, basically.
Yeah. Like, I want to hear... I can...
Nope.
In the cow doing...
Nope, we lost you
again.
Why?
No.
It's whenever you start to talk.
Tolerate. You say... Anyone but you say the cow is Frieza. Like, I don't really go for like the little tiny alien man fuck you up and be really creepy. No, I need more like the oh.
Yeah, you gotta have the high pitch. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Kokusa.
anyway, good action. But I'm pleased to see the story end.
Yeah, it didn't draw it out too long, which is good.
Yeah, I think it was a bit flabby in the middle.
Yeah.
But look forward. Is it a New Year's
special
themed episode next?
Yeah, and then back to, I don't know what business they're going to be getting back to. Probably just more Nanashi being a creep and see if they develop that any further.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah. And Neko Masume puts a hand on Kichiro's thigh next episode. That's
hey, that's not cool, man.
Well, yeah. Or it'll turn out to be not hurt his thigh. We'll see. It just cut to make it look like that. Then we got Double Decker, Doug and Kirill, episode 13, and then there were none.
I think the actual episode is, and then there weren't none.
Yeah, right? Yeah, in the written thing it's were none, but I think it's weren't none in the actual subtitle.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that plays off much better. I realise they should have called the other one Yuri Only Lives Twice, but then that would have given away who was getting killed that episode. So everything is explained, and then some. And then another 143 episodes, series are teased at the end.
I did like the announcement, that's too many guys.
He's right.
Come on, guys, we can't have that many
people.
Put on all the Raditz thing. Oh, that guy we sent was super strong, like, Bayern.
Yeah, our weakest guy we sent, yeah, standard.
Yes. So I like the fact that, getting killed was all part of Doug's plan.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how I didn't realize it, because when he got shot with Doug, his own gun, and
like,
earlier
he basically
that
put
previous
that
episode,
gun into your man's pocket, yeah.
Yes. He was saying, because they asked him, don't you want a bigger gun? No, I want the smallest gun you've got.
I need something with a very low stopping power, because I don't want to get hurt when I get shot by this gun. It's all part of my plan. I did like, in him revealing of the plan, there's several moments of like just his face snickering at his plan working, because he's a dick.
The snickering
bit. It wasn't even part of the plan. It's just him fucking around with Kirill, even at this climactic moment.
But fucking around with Kirill was part of the plan, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yes, because then that gets the proper reaction out of Kirill, is that, yes, he told Kirill that it would be Diana getting kidnapped, to which Kirill goes, that's great, Diana would be great at getting kidnapped. She's perfect for it.
He was up for that plan. It's like, you motherfucker, I'm playing with your heartstrings.
Oh, it's your brother. obviously the serum is a complete fake, because, as pointed out, urine would not have the DNA in it in the first place.
Although, it takes a while to make a fucking antidote out of, like, someone's blood and shit, dude. Come on, think about
antibodies,
it. We made three fake serums just to really fuck with you. It was actually adrenaline? Just to make his heart go faster. And
yes, it was just adrenaline. So that he'll use Anthem, and then their jurisdiction kicks
it's
in.
It's like, oh, now we can shoot you legally. You used the right front of me.
Also,
I can shoot you now. That's how it works.
Yeah, because they know they can't use the bullets on him normally, because he doesn't overdrive when he's using his normal superpowers.
But if he uses Anthem,
take Anthem on top of his powers he's already got, then he will definitely overdrive.
Also, he'll turn into a reverse Hulk, which was an interesting choice.
What? No, he's just a grey Hulk.
He's purple, but he's wearing green shredded pants.
I thought he was grey, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I thought.
Okay,
it was
I thought they
well.
Were doing the purple and green, like the reverse of it. My bad. I guess that'd be the infraggable crunk in that case. Yeah.
Yes.
And so it all leads to that, but they managed to. And also, then because Kirill's already signed his papers, he's now the power passes to him.
Well, everyone else has evacuated the base, so I guess he's the next person in command in the base.
Yes. So therefore he can take Cooper in after they've removed his power.
Yeah, and they can call off the bombers coming in to bomb the place, but the self-destruct sequence, that's still fucking ticking. So,
Yes. So that's the only problem they've got. So they've got to escape that, and then... And then Kirill's like, oh, I'm perfectly calm. This is what I wanted. But then he realizes he's not the hero, he's the sidekick to his hero.
Yeah, that's okay.
That's still pretty cool.
I couldn't find it because I wanted to take the screenshots. I can't remember exactly where the episode is, when they're describing Doug.
When they reveal that he's actually a prick.
Yeah, but it's the bit about him, if he says something, he'll do it with the minimum amount of effort.
Yeah, as in, if he has to save the world, he'll do it by five so he can clock out on time.
Yeah.
That kind of, I did like that, yeah.
It kind of reminds me of a because I'm very, very lazy, but I work very hard, so I can be lazy.
Yes.
Yes, I'm the same. It was like, finally, or work smart so you can be lazy. Like, he works within the rules to get things done the most efficiently way possible. And I was like, yeah, that's what I want to see as a hero rather than the guy who overworks himself to death. But then, yeah, he's not entirely immune to wanting to be a hero when he gets crushed under.
Yeah, his thumbs up when I'm okay, like in the smoke, was actually him doing like a Terminator thumbs up kind of thing.
Well, it's mirroring the episode when he got stuck in the pipe in the first episode. Yeah.
But obviously this one, he's in a more precarious position. But it's a fortunate explosion that launches him towards the helicopter.
Yes. Which is being piloted by Yuri, and which they say, Kirill, don't ask, question it, we'll explain it later.
We have to get away from the explosion.
You could blame Travis.
Yeah. It is all Travis's fault, and what a wonderful fucking asshole he is.
Yeah,
so it turns out when we saw him earlier with coffee on his shirt
that was important.
What had actually happened is he'd accidentally spilt coffee into Yuri while she was recharging, and he was embarrassed, so he got her backup body out, made a copy of it.
Super illegal. So she's been a copy up to this point. After that point, yes.
While he was drying her out.
And it's a good thing he doesn't take sugar in his coffee, because that would have fried the circus. Oh, fucking hell.
But yeah, it was such a daft thing. And then Brian thinks he can get on his rocket and get back to base, and then he'll bring an army here. But then Zabel shows up, and he's like, how did you get here? And I was using one of these things, he's miming the hand car movement, which is great, because it's like no one can remember what they're called.
I came on, one of those. Your man's like, also miming back while he has a gun.
It makes sense. I mean, we all live in the old West anymore. I'm not using these things on a regular basis.
I know, but people know what they are. They still know the name of them. Yeah. And that's... It's the fact that that would come up in a conversation at this point in the story.
At a deadly point when, the fucking the base is going to explode, the rocket can't quite take off, and he's got him under a gun. It's like, it's like a thing that goes up and down.
Baby train. Whatever it is.
That's not what it is. Damn it.
Yeah, and Zabel explains, you didn't think everybody from the cast was going to survive this.
Come on, that's not how the sequels work.
Yes.
And I'm not doing this out of revenge. It's because you wasted food.
And then at the end we get most of the characters we've met throughout the series. We get little scenes with them to see where they are. So even that nice prison warder, she's overseeing the girl visiting the girl from the high school in prison.
Oh, your man's bus got wrecked as well.
Oh, Derek.
Yes, he did, yes.
Derek's bus got crushed holding open the door.
And now he can't pay back the money he borrowed off Valerie.
They all seem to be just going with that, so I'm not sure if his brother has decided to be a woman, or do they still want to fuck with Derek? I'm not. It's one or the other, or both.
But we see they've got a new place open.
Working out of an alley now. Presumably, he had the space that he rented to. Have parked the bus in or whatever.
I need to go back to see, because we see the two cops whose faces were pixelated in the TV episode, and they're unpixelated now, and I don't know if we've seen them elsewhere.
Right.
In the series.
Because obviously we see your man standing beside the mayor, or the...
The hero cop is with the mayor, who was working with Esperanza, but because he's going heavy onto anti-drugs, He's not the mayor, he's the guy who's running for mayor against the current
mayor. That's
how 7-0 have been allowed to stay open. Also because people are still dealing Anthem.
We also see
the quote-unquote drunk guy, and we also see his wife now in the streets as well, who presumably is also from outer space, because he knew all about it.
He just revealed it in his drunkenness, yeah.
Yes. And yeah, then we get this cutaway to outer space where we get the reveal that there's another 143 of these genetically modified super soldiers. As you say, the narrator is horrified that that's far too many people to fight.
Yeah, so to be continued? Like, we've set it up so we can do more.
Well,
so...
question mark.
Yeah.
Yes. And I forgot this was announced as, like, the first part of a Tiger and Bunny animation project.
Yeah, universe
so
or something.
There's intimation that there's other things they're working on Tiger Bunny related. And currently this is not very Tiger and Bunny related, but it is, because there's things in it which are Tiger and Bunny things. And some of the stuff. Yeah, I like this episode, and it so much that it put away a lot of the shortcomings of earlier episodes in my mind.
Yeah, it landed pretty solid.
Yeah, I still found the whole, there's guys from outer space, and kind of, this is sort of going to explain a lot of way of the mysteries of the show by aliens. I found that.
Not aliens, the humans in space.
Outer space, outer space super soldiers, whatever the fuck it is. I still find that like a bit hard to follow, but kind of by the end of this episode, I was a bit like, I can't stay mad at you.
Yeah, I mean, like even the conversation between Doug and Carol at the end, where it's like, well, I guess we're not heroes. I guess we're a detective show. Well, a detective show with a bit of comedy, yeah, and some wacky hijinks. And they're literally having that conversation. It's like, don't take it too seriously. The characters in the show are literally saying about their lives.
Yeah, it does make the sort of transforming Men in Black hair makes more sense to them, because that's probably what they're going to be if they continue on with the story. It could be one busting these guys who are trying to come down from space and wreck shit up, put them away. Scum of the universe. Or at least just part of the universe, just in the orbit of our own planet.
Or it is our own planet in the future. Which I assume is the idea. I assume it's like some sort of... Because it appears there has been an apocalypse in the
past.
That's
why the people went into space.
Don't recall.
And that their technology has regressed, / they still have some shit better than us, yeah.
It's like, what? Because we just recently watched Brave Star for Christmas. It's like, sky with three suns. It's like, oh, well, it's two suns here.
I don't know, they might tie Brave Star into this. Who knows?
Brave Star. What is it? Two suns. Visionaries said their planet two sons.
There you go. Another thing that'll be tied into the Tiger and Bunny cinematic universe.
Yes. It was a bit of a crossover event in animation history.
Oh, dear.
And then finally, the seasonal episode of School Facebook Seller Honda-san, episode 12, Merry Christmas, Mr. Bookstore, and It's Time to Close. So the first half, unsurprisingly, covers what it's like at Christmas in the bookstore.
Oh, pretty much retail in general, yeah.
Yes. But yeah, not so many retails have to, like, cellophane together 100 volumes of Kachikawa.
I guess that's specific to bookstore management. Yeah, yeah.
That's definitely not within the bounds of the Secret Santa.
They did sell one, though, which they were quite surprised about.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out what comic that was.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be something
that
specific.
That other one was.
Yeah.
I recognise the Kachikawa one with the asterisks in the middle.
If they didn't have to bleep stuff out, this show could be one of the best advertisements ever. He's buying all of them. It must be good, that kind of way.
It's only Kadokawa gets unbleeped. Yeah, they got to wear your Christmas hats.
In ignominy of it all.
And then you get the different types of customers, like people who've left it too late, people who seem they want something really specific, but they'll just take the very first thing you give them.
He's just buying for his wife. Anything will do, really.
And I feel like there was a bit of wordplay I missed with the old lady that didn't come quite through in the translation. Because it was like feel good. She wanted feel good in the translation, and they thought the...
Armor.
Yeah, the, well, it's the, no, it's the one with the wraps around her face. Thought she was going to take her to the boys' love show.
Well, maybe that's what makes her feel good. It could just be as simple as that.
I feel like it was the specific turn of phrase that she was using would lead you to think it was boys' love, which probably didn't translate up. And then there's the guy who did buy the, yeah, as you say, did buy the massive collection, and then he wanted it wrapped, which sent Honda into a panic, but then he was like, but I only do the bags. So other people do the actual wrapping.
But the guy showed up and did that for him, so that worked out. It went reasonably without incident as Christmas things go, and then it's like, right, now for the New Year's sale, we got to prep for that. And it's just like basically just changing out all the Christmas cards for New Year's cards and mochi packs. Yeah.
Yes. And the brown paperback guy was most upset because he didn't want to put the Christmas hat on, and now he's got a giant mochi hat thing on.
That's worse. That's so much worse than a Santa hat, yeah.
And then in It's Time to Close, it deals with what's it like working on the night shift in a bookstore. As Honda does, and he keeps on getting distracted throughout the episode because he is admiring everybody who regularly works on the night shift.
Just admires their work ethic and everything. What was the reason your one couldn't work on the night shift? Because she's very upset.
Well, she's the section. I think she wanted to like carry on working. I think the idea is that she does too much overtime.
Oh, so they're telling her to cut
back.
And
she's supposed to be the section chief, and they're trying to make the point that you shouldn't be doing so much overtime, because then the people working underneath you will think they have to do loads of overtime as well, because you're doing it.
But she really wants to work.
Yes.
All right.
But yeah, he gets so distracted by how good the part-timers are at night that when he's supposed to be guarding the store, stopping more customers coming in, that he fails. And
beautiful people are allowed into the store.
Yes. One of whom finds his English hilarious.
I did like that he was trying to like hide it from Honda. He's like, oh no, I've suddenly come over. It's like, I'm very embarrassed about the situation. I'm actually trying not to laugh at your amazing English.
Yes, and Honda realizes he's made a mistake during it as well. Not bad, even if I did goodnight to them twice.
They're counting the till, and there's like one discrepancy, and they're just panicking over that. That's a standard retail thing. All goes up. It works out pretty good.
Yeah, and it's a good way to end the series, because you kind of see.
I look forward to it, because I watched the wrong one. I was a bit behind, and more behind than I realized on Honda's end.
Well, okay.
I'll get onto it, don't worry.
That is everything, I do believe.
I must drop that I've watched a bit of what's available, a bit more of what's available, but back at the Grappler, Grappy Bracky. It's crazy. It's pretty mad. I feel like Inagaki is just you must read a lot of like National Geographic or Science magazine or something like that. I think that's a really interesting concept or thing. How can I tie that into my like bloodthirsty battle manga?
It's the same as like Araki. It's just like you're reading a bunch of things, and you have like this back, probably a couple of folders of like shit that is cool that you want to put in your fucking story, and then eventually work it into. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about right. There's lots of comic.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's great to have a big folder of references. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was worse when Warren Ellis used to. I stopped reading his blog because it was always like, you'd read his blog,
and then you know what's coming
up. Yeah, 6 months later, you'd see all that material repurposed into a comic.
Yeah, takes the magic out of it, I suppose.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, this is pretty good, though. Like, it's a little rough around the edges in terms of production, but I think this the insanity of the material shines through.
Okay, good.
Well, essentially, it's got like sort of a clashing of philosophies here, because there are the five escaped serial killers who come to Japan and try and fight Baki, and now Baki is being assembled along with a bunch of other guys from the underground fighting world, you know, so they're five toughest guys, and they're going to have not quite a tournament, because basically these guys they want to kind of test each other's strengths out in the real world, you know, not within the confines of an arena or a ring. They want to do this, like, you know, as I would happen to say, if you just kind of
in the wild
suddenly in real life. So all bets are off. You can be doing anything. You could be fun, like having a nap at home. You could be fun eating your dinner. You could be in bed with your lover. You could, anybody can just jump in there and start a fight with you. And so you have like these guys squaring off then, and our five good guys, they're all more about kind of staying true to the martial arts spirit. The five serial killers, they are about like winning at whatever cost, whatever means. So they're using weapons and stuff. And it seems like, this isn't a match. This is a fight. This is like a battle. This is war. So you use whatever advantage we can kind of get to you. So, whatever means you need to kind of do that. And you can kind of see where they're coming from as well. At the point I'm at now, you're kind of seeing that flipped again with the five martial artists, good guys, coming back and saying, yeah, make a fair point there. But, however, if you rely on weapons too much, then they can become a crutch. And once you're divested of them, you've nothing left to rely on but your own body. And that's what you should be honing and focusing on rather than doing that.
It's also a battle of philosophy.
Yes. Like, for instance, Dapo Orochi, like kind of karate master, he gets injured on the street with Dorian, who is like the big kind of Hulk Hogan looking guy, squaring off against each other and trading a few blows. But in the middle of that, Dorian had slipped over a length of piano wire over one of Dapo's hands. And he goes on a great length about this, about the piano wire. I was saying it is like the best piano wire. It's been made from this high tensile, like fiber. It's so delicate you won't even notice it. If you probably only feel like a spider's web on your hand, you wouldn't even kind of feel it unless you would be looking for it. And it's like one micron thing of metal. And he takes his fucking left hand off. It's like, oh shit. What's the karate guy going to do now that he's putting left hands off? Because you can't use those to fighting guys with. But then Topic was back saying, my left hand is gone. You know, the thing I hated most about doing karate training was doing spear hand training for your hands. This is where you're kind of, you're like thrusting your hands into like a coarse sand to toughen them up. Really hated that bit. And I thought, wouldn't it be much easier if you just like, you know, two big blocks of bone at the end of your hand instead of punch guys with? So, if anything, buddy, you've done me a favor and whams him in the face with a stump.
Good stuff. Yeah, I've got to get onto that. That sounds great.
Similar little vignettes play out of rising in different levels of fucking absurdity. It's good stuff. I'm looking forward to getting the rest of that first half of the series and whenever to get more in. Yeah, it's special. It's unique. And we live in a blessed age that there is a platform and an arena for this kind of content to get something of this kind of.
Yeah, that platform is definitely Netflix.
Yeah.
Judging by the end of the show. So I see Sirius the Jaeger's finally up there as well.
Oh, okay,
that's right. Yeah.
Guy of a cadet boy, too.
And, I see they've also got Pokemon the movie I Choose You up.
Yeah.
Just gone up.
Seven Deadly Sins for them on there. I literally just started into a little bit of the Jesus Christ. How long has it been coming? Like nearly the bones of a year waiting for that new anime to come out. It's been kind of out for nearly a year too in Japan. I'm only getting it. Only got out there like a little while ago. Which more reminded me, gotta jump back into where I left the comic at, because this is like equivalently years ago from where I left off reading it.
Right.
Yeah, but I was about to check out that film, certainly. See what the great shakes to that.
And out of nowhere, the Indian dub for Ninja Hattori. The English dub produced in India. And also the new Ninja Hattori thing produced for Ninja Hattori Returns is also up there. That was the one. That's the modern one produced because Ninja Hattori was so popular in India. The one Ninja Hattori Returns is hard to find because it's been listed with its Japanese title.
Okay.
I can't remember if I've seen that one. I think I've seen some of this. I think it was the Indian dub of Doraemon, maybe I saw. I know the dubbing is variable in terms of performance. You can definitely tell it's Indian, but hey, it's Ninja Hattori. When else am I going to see Ninja Hattori? in English. It may come in useful, I do believe, on a new Dynamite in the Brain idea we've got.
Ooh.
Yes, the anime that didn't make us. Okay. Well, what it's currently
we're laying our hands out here.
Named as. So the idea is we're going to watch anime from when we were 8 to 10 years old that we didn't get to see when we were 8 to 10 years old. And see what it would have been like if we had that to watch as children. Instead of, as it turns out, when I go back and look, just very, at least for me, very little. Very little when I was 8 was on TV compared to now.
Mm. But, well.
Also, a lot of it very, very U-tree-y as well. That's the other downside when you go back and look.
Oh.
What was I watching when I was 8? Oh, loads of sexual predators.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, that will like vary from person to person, because obviously me and. Me, it'd be different. For Dwayne, it'd be different. For anybody else who we're going to get on, it'd be different.
Yes. Yeah. It'd just be a recurring thing when I'm picking an episode. I came back to see what was on in the UK at that time.
Perfect. Sure.
I'm hyped up to do that at some point, but probably won't be till February, maybe end of January. Probably February, because we've got Dragon Ball Super to do a podcast about. Mm. Broly. Otherwise, we'll be back next week with 2 weeks' worth of anime to talk about, but probably less anime than we talked about this week.